Welcome to another Baseball America podcast along with Aaron Fitt. I am John Manuel, and this season's college baseball podcasts are sponsored by Project Lomo. Logan Morrison of the Miami Marlins lost his father to cancer in 2010, and he's worked tirelessly for a cause he cares about, fighting lung cancer. Now he's asking young fans to find a cause they care about and to do something about it. Logan will be launching this program in person, visiting Miami High School on Wednesday of this week. You can learn more details about it at projectlomo.mlblogs.com. It's a great initiative, and the young fans who do the most amazing projects will have a chance to go to a Marlins game, meet Logan Morrison and some of his teammates, throw out the first pitch, and win $1,000 cash money as the prize. And we want to thank the folks at Project Lomo for sponsoring the college podcast. And great cause. And Aaron, we hope it's a great college podcast today. You will try to win today's podcast, Aaron. I'll tell you what. It was very hard to win today's top 25 rankings meeting because for the first time, Aaron, we really debated for the first time since the preseason, we really debated the number one ranking, and it was quite a long debate, and it wasn't a clear-cut debate, Aaron. We wound up leaving North Carolina at number one, having Vanderbilt at number two, but it was a tough one because North Carolina did not win its weekend series, but they didn't lose it either.
You know, and it's interesting, too, that it's the same two teams we were debating that we debated way back in January. And we had a pretty long debate in January about North Carolina versus Vanderbilt.
Yeah, we did.
If you recall, I mean, I think you went into the meeting with Vanderbilt and I went in with North Carolina. And, you know, those two teams, I should mention, were exactly tied in the preseason fit matrix.
Awesome. We haven't had a fit matrix reference in a long time.
I went back and looked that up to yesterday because I was curious. I was like, I wonder what the fit matrix said about these teams.
awesome.
But you know, I mean, they're the two teams for us, and LSU has kind of been in there, and Fullerton, and you know, Virginia hadn't been too far back, and Oregon State. But you know, for us, most of the year it's been UNC and Vanderbilt at the top. And this week, look, Vanderbilt's 19-2 in the SEC. That is the best start ever in the SEC through 21 games. So that's loud. It's not, you know, I mean, 18-3 in the ACC is also loud, and 41-4 overall. If you're trying to compare the bodies of work, I suppose, you know, the first thing you look at is Vanderbilt. They're 9-1 against the top 25. North Carolina's 2-1.
Right.
However, I don't think that tells the whole story. I mean, we had a commenter last week on one of our pieces say that North Carolina played a horrible strength of schedule. It's like, no, and that's inaccurate.
It's just not accurate.
They swept three games at Virginia Tech, the team that's been in and out of the rankings all year long. They weren't ranked when North Carolina played them, so they don't get credit for it. But Virginia Tech has won series against Florida State and Virginia. I mean, they're obviously a pretty solid team. They won two out of three against Clemson before that team got in the rankings. Clemson's, you know, been a pretty solid top 25 team lately. You know, so Carolina doesn't get credit for those. So that's 5-1. They don't get credit for. So that would be what then
seven and two
against top 25 if you throw those games in. So really, it's not that different of a resume. I mean, yes, the biggest difference for me, I guess, is that Vanderbilt went to Oregon and won two out of three back in the non-conference. Carolina did have one good non-conference trip. Also, they went to Houston College Classic. They just didn't know it was going to be a lousy year for the Houston College Classic.
Right.
It's not their fault.
And intended strength of schedule for North Carolina looks better on paper. I mean, usually it's a pretty big series when your second series of the year is a team from that didn't go to when you're playing at home against a team that went to Omaha last year. That's usually a big deal. But you know,
right.
North Carolina scheduled Stony Brook this year at home for a weekend series. The year after, Stony Brook had nine players drafted. The year after, they went to Omaha. You know, Seton Hall, which they play every year. Yeah, this is a good Seton Hall team. It's a very good Seton Hall team. It's a Seton Hall team that started the year 0-9 and is 25-17 since then. I think this is a regional team for Seton Hall. I think it's a doggone good Northeast team and maybe the best team in the Northeast. I mean, it's just, you know, I don't think – I'm not casting any aspersions on Vanderbilt's schedule here, but I'm saying people who cast aspersions on North Carolina's schedule, I think, are doing so from a position of ignorance.
And the Tar Heels, John, here's the other thing. People who like the RPI, the Tar Heels are 17-4 against the top 50. Vanderbilt's 12-2.
Yeah, and bottom line, if you want to say it's a weak schedule, which I don't think it's a weak schedule, but it's not the strongest schedule in the world. If you want to say it's a weak schedule, dominate that quote-unquote weak schedule – Don't they still lead the nation in run differential, in scoring runs per game? They're second in run prevention. So if you think it's a weak schedule, well, there's some evidence of it because they've dominated that weak schedule. If you actually think that it was intended to be a pretty strong schedule and just, you know, Cal, which went to Omaha 2-3 years ago, is down this year. A&M went to Omaha 2 years ago. They're down this year. Rice, you know, they beat Rice in a very close game. Rice is down this year. Seton Hall, they come at the right time of the year. Stony Brook's down this year. I think it was intended to be a pretty strong schedule. It just hasn't worked out that way. And the other thing I'd say about that, Aaron, is that Vanderbilt's SEC schedule is about as weak as it could be for an SEC schedule when you consider the SEC's kind of top-heavy this year. And their best conference series wins are against Florida, Ole Miss, and Mississippi State. And none of those three teams is a juggernaut. And certainly we like Mississippi State's talent. We like Ole Miss's talent. And I think we definitely respect the way Florida's come together with its young talent. But there's also a series win there against Tennessee, series sweep against Missouri, series win at Georgia, series sweep at Auburn. Those four teams aren't going to regionals.
Yeah.
Now, those teams are not
going to,
they're not even sniffing regionals. So I'm not saying it's a weak schedule because it was an SEC schedule. But just it's the strongest start in SEC history in conference games. There's a reason for that. The number one reason is Vanderbilt is awesome. The number two reason for that is they've played a pretty weak SEC schedule.
And you know, North Carolina's also got four series in their conference against non-regional teams.
Right.
Duke, Maryland, Boston College, and Wake Forest.
Right.
And, you know, they won all those series, too. You mentioned scoring differential, and I think this is important. These two teams are first and second in the nation in scoring margin.
Wow.
North Carolina has outscored their opponents by 6 runs per game. Vanderbilt has outscored their opponents by 4.3 runs per game. That's second in the nation, and they're almost 2 runs a game less than North Carolina. I mean, that's incredible domination. Yes, I know Vanderbilt had a 4-0 week. I thought it was an impressive 4-0 week because I still like that Mississippi State team.
Yep.
They have been playing well. That's a good sweep, and you know I like Louisville. That's a really good midweek win. Very good 4-0 week. And Carolina had a 2-2 week. You know, that split was unsatisfying. You know, kiss your sister, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, that was a letdown. You know, I was all geared up for that all weekend long. I was waiting for that Sunday game on, you know, while I'm doing tracker and watching the game of the week on TV. And then it just, what a bummer to have that game bagged. But
tell us about it, those of us who wanted to go to the game in person. At least I would, you know.
Yeah, no
I mean,
kidding.
Sunday I'm
no
sitting
kidding.
There splashing in the puddles with my son and my daughter waiting for my wife to get home so I can go to that game. My wife gets home and she gets out of the car and she's like, so you can go to that game now. You know, I don't mean to, you know, she didn't block me in the driveway. She pulls in and goes, so, you know, are you going to go ahead and go to that game? And I just looked at my phone as, you know, my daughter was down the street and starts yelling, mommy's coming home, mommy's coming home. And I check my phone and it's like, game canceled. I mean, it was a bummer because I was all ready to go. You know, I was ready to go.
Yep, it was.
Get to the ballpark and it was a real bummer. Let's go through those two series real quick, Aaron. North Carolina obviously had a midweek loss to UNC Wilmington, which was I don't think it's a bad loss to lose midweek to UNC Wilmington, which I think we both think is a regional team. Just dropped out of this week's top 25 because they lost a series at Towson. But it was the way North Carolina lost that game that was troubling because they had a 6-0 lead, blew it, then came back to take an 8-7 lead. I guess actually an 8-6 lead on a home run by Colin Moran, lost that game when Trent Thornton gave up that lead. But then, you know, I was at the game Friday, a dominating win by North Carolina, and then they lose Saturday to Carlos Rodon. It's not a surprise, is it, Aaron, that if there's a chink in the armor for North Carolina, that it would be that left-handed. All their losses are against left-handed pitching. That's just fairly typical, I guess, for North Carolina. And I guess the thing that makes them atypical for most North Carolina teams had been Sky Bolt, as good as
right.
he is from the right side, and so I guess that's the thing. They're doing this without Sky Bolt. I really don't think there's a chink in the armor. I don't think there's anything bad about losing to Carlos Rodon when he's on his A game.
And this was their first midweek loss of the year. I mean, this is
amazing.
I mean, it's a 2-2 week. Well, yeah, sure. Vanderbilt was 2-2 last week with losses to Georgia and Tennessee Tech. I mean, thank you. I'll take this week over that week.
That's
and
right.
And I just – it's tough. It's tough to separate these teams. I think you entered the meeting with Vanderbilt, number one, and then we talked it out, and this is kind of where we wound up. But
I did. I mean, there's nothing to separate them, like you said. I mean, I really do think the preponderance of the evidence is that these two teams are exactly who we thought they were at the start of the year. It's very difficult to separate them. Correct me if I'm wrong. It feels like North Carolina's had to deal with maybe a little bit more adversity as far as injuries go. They had Chaz Frank out for a week. Their bullpen is not the team. This is not the bullpen we thought they had. I guess for me, Aaron, if there's a significant advantage from one team to the other, and I'm not saying it's a gross advantage, but like the most significant advantage to me, I think North Carolina's offense is better, and when Sky Bold is there, it's significantly better. But I think Vanderbilt's pitching staff is a little bit better, especially at the back of the bullpen. And I would say overall that Vanderbilt's pitching staff is a little bit better than North Carolina's. But on Fridays, as good as Kevin Zomek is, give me Ken Emanuel every day.
I'm with you on that. I think Emanuel's just about the best big game pitcher in the nation right now. I mean, you know, you think back to a guy that what was it, a shutout he threw against Texas and Omaha as a freshman.
Complete
I mean,
game he's shutout.
He's got big game experience. He's got tons of experience, period. I mean, he's just pitched a lot of games and won a lot of games. He's a stud. But yeah, I agree. I mean, I think Vanderbilt's bullpen has, and it's interesting, earlier this year, that was not really a strength other than Miller. It was, you know, it was erratic. You think back to that. Yeah, you think back to that Oregon series. I mean, that was, they had some bullpen adventures out there. But, you know, it has come together, you know, and Carson Fulmer has emerged as just a kind of a tour de force back there, you know, to go along with Miller. And then, you know, it's so much depth. And now they've got TJ Pegoraro. I mean, you talked about adversity. You know, that's a guy that hadn't really been healthy for most of the season. He pitched five innings this weekend, and it was his longest start of the year. So now they're finally healthy in the rotation at full strength. You know, that allows them to have Phil Pfeiffer back in the bullpen, and you know they got Buehler back there. Ravenel has got a big arm.
I heard a 97 on Adam Ravenel. I was going to tell you.
I heard the same thing.
And,
I mean,
and Walker Buehler. So like we got Walker. Is it Buehler or Buehler?
Buehler.
Buehler. That's more fun. Ravenel, Buehler, and Fulmer. You got three just giant arms out of the bullpen. And North Carolina has some power in the bullpen with Mason McCullough, but they don't feel like they want to use him. And then, you know,
I mean, Tyler, Thornton's power.
Power. But I think Thornton is good power. He's not at the level of these guys. And then the difference is that Thornton has got just cojones, stones, whatever you want to say. His toughness is off the charts. And he also throws in some funk and some deception. Noticing the funk almost sells his power short. But let's talk a little bit about Vanderbilt, because I think we've talked a lot about North Carolina this year. But Vanderbilt, Aaron, this weekend was just kind of surgical. I mean, they're just such a dominant team. And here Mississippi State maybe comes out on a Sunday hoping to salvage one, and they just get blown out in the first two innings with Lindgren on the mound, who is a power arm.
Yeah.
And talk a little bit about Vanderbilt's weekend, and then also who is Xander Wheel and where did this guy come from?
You know, he's a redshirt freshman that had honestly, I never heard of the guy until 2 weeks ago. I mean, he was just not a key piece for them coming in. He wasn't like a big name recruit. He was just under the radar.
Yep.
But they liked the way he had developed, and they stuck him in the lineup, and he's just hit. You know, he had three home runs his first three games, and now he's hitting right there in the middle of the lineup right behind Conrad Gregor, who's seemed like he's coming on pretty good here, which is important for them. He got off kind of a slow start for Vanderbilt. But, you know, now that they feel like they're firing on all cylinders. You know, Tony Kemp is doing his Tony Kemp stuff, and, you know, I like the mix they have of exciting, dynamic young players, you know, the Xavier Turners and, you know, the various other freshmen, Rhett Wiseman when he's in there. I mean, these exciting young guys with the veterans, the seniors, the Stremskis and the Harrells and the Gregors and Kemps and Spencer Navin. I mean, it's the one question I still have about Vanderbilt that I'm still not in love with, you know, the left side of the infield, I guess. I mean, I guess Vince Condi's been pretty good at shortstop. But to me, you know, I don't know.
I think if you're comparing these two teams, I think that's a fair comparison to that. I feel North Carolina's defense overall in the infield is a little better than Vanderbilt's, a little more consistent.
I think I feel that way as well. And so, that's we're splitting hairs trying to separate these teams. I suppose we should probably move on, but they're both really good. Is the point.
The last thing I'll say is the other difference to me for Vanderbilt and the pitching staff being really good is Ben Moss has been up and down for North Carolina. Tyler Beattie, I know he's walked a lot of guys. He's pretty much been up. He's 11-0, more strikeouts than innings pitched. He's pitching with the caveat that there's some command issues. He's pitching like a unsigned first-round pick is supposed to. I hope Carsten Whitson and Dylan Covey are taking notes, but it's probably too late for both those guys. So
it's and Beattie has really kind of reined in the walks, it seems like, over the last couple of weeks. I mean, before he was winning with five or six walks, you know, and just giving up two hits and six innings, and there you go. But now it seems like he's – last couple of weeks, those walk totals have come down, and he's just really come into his own now.
Pretty impressive stuff. These are two great teams. And kudos to you and the Fit Matrix for having them at the top of our rankings at the start of the year. And I mean, it was kind of clear. I think we talked about it last year, even in Omaha, that these two teams would be the preseason 1 and 2. But, those teams don't always live up to it. And these two teams have. That's a real credit to both coaching staffs as well and to the players, obviously, for living up to for playing with that hype and living up to it. Speaking of the SEC, Aaron, I guess the biggest news in the SEC weekend was South Carolina going down to LSU and winning 2 out of 3. The way the poll mechanics worked out, I sometimes hesitate to use that phrase, but I don't know how else you could say it. South Carolina wound up not moving up in the rankings. And they also had a 2-2 week with a midseason loss. I'm sure it chapped some great Alton Bridges barbecue was had by both clubs. At least I hope so. I hope Alton Bridges catered because I know Chad Holbrook likes Alton Bridges there in Shelby. That's the number one barbecue establishment in Shelby, and that's where Chad is from. So Chad knows his barbecue in Shelby. He probably eats less of it than I do because he's healthier. But
this podcast brought to you by Alton Rivers Barbecue.
Alton Bridges Barbecue is so awesome. I mean, I love Alton Bridges Barbecue. So second of all, they did lose that midweek game, but how did it happen, Aaron? How did LSU lose its first weekend series of the year?
They got beat by good pitching. I mean, and, you know, kind of pointed it out in weekend preview about – the way LSU punished that all lefty rotation when they faced Kentucky. And, you know, South Carolina rolls in there with three lefties and you know, they really kind of shut LSU down. I mean, Belcher, you know, lost on Friday, but he wasn't bad. And then the next 2 days, you know, Montgomery and Wynkoop were fantastic. And those guys are tough and they're finally all healthy. This rotation, you know, they've had injury issues this year. They haven't lost a series when they've had those three guys on the rotation. And you know, now it feels like they're getting dangerous. You know, we talked a couple weeks ago about how, you know, Pancake and Griner, we thought had to pick it up a little bit. Well, you look up and Joey Pancake's got what, 9 home runs or something on the year. And, you know, Griner feels like he's had a number of big hits and, those guys have done it, and Tanner English has done it. Tanner English has had some big hits. I don't know. I mean, I feel like this South Carolina team is really gelling now. And you know, the biggest thing was they had to get healthy, and they needed some of those guys to step it up a little bit, and they have.
They've also got a pretty doggone good closer in Tyler Webb. I mean, we saw him in Omaha last year. I still don't know how that guy didn't get drafted higher. Pro body, tall, skinny body.
Left-handed.
With power.
I mean, wasn't even last year, wasn't he up to 93, if I recall?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't get that.
I did not get that one. I really didn't get that one. But, I mean, all the ingredients are there for South Carolina. It really does feel like this is a team that, if it comes together offensively, that this is a team that could really, get nuts on somebody, to put it in the Seinfeld vernacular. I mean, they could really get nuts, and they still haven't hit their stride, and they're still having a season that, by every other program in the world standards, people would be pretty doggone excited about it. And, you know, they've got power, like they've got 40 home runs as a team. They've got some speed, although they don't steal a ton of bases. Feels like this is a team that could beat you in a lot of different ways. They have some depth. They have some different options. So like you said, I think it's important to note, as you did, and they have started to get healthy with Montgomery getting back on the mound. And I think when your name is Wynkoop, I guess it's, you have to go play for the Chickens. So it makes sense from that standpoint for South Carolina.
They just, I don't know. I mean, this is going to be interesting team to watch. It doesn't get easier this weekend. They've got Vanderbilt coming in. Really exciting series that we'll focus on in weekend preview a little bit this coming week. But these guys, they still have that South Carolina factor. And I went on, I think, a whole bunch of radio shows last week talking about that South Carolina LSU series, because those are two of the most voracious media markets. I mean, I love that. Everyone asked me, who do you like? And I said, well, on paper, you got to like LSU. They're at home. I think they're the better team on paper. If you break them down, I think they're more talented. But how many times have we said that about South Carolina over the last 3 years? The finals against UCLA, they were the underdog on paper. The finals against Florida, they were certainly the underdog on paper. Every year it's like these guys, they just, the sum is better than the whole. And this team, I think, still has a bunch of those. I know Roth and Price and Walker and that generation is gone, but they still have a bunch of guys here who played in the College World Series finals. I mean, this team is loaded with experience. I mean, Tyler Webb and, obviously Nolan Belcher's been there forever.
Right.
He could graduate with a fistful of rings at this point.
I think Nolan Belcher, he probably was there when they lost that regional at East Carolina, for crying out loud. I mean, he's been there a long time.
So. Yeah, and Pancake and Griner, those guys played as freshmen heavily, and Dantzler, of course, was there. I mean, it's just like there's an on and on. There's a bunch of guys who are kind of complimentary players, and so they still have that South Carolina it factor. Don't ever sleep on these guys.
I think I'm with you on that. I don't know. As I look at that lineup, I still, LB Dantzler's an outstanding senior and is having a great year, but he's in his second year. I don't know who Christian Walker is for them. Who is that guy who's always going to come through with that hit? But you know what? I think it's
Dantzler.
You think it's Dantzler?
I mean, I'm not saying he's as good as Christian Walker, but he's there this year's. There's this year's Christian Walker. I mean, if he's slot right into that role,
I'm afraid he's this year's Jerome Peters or who was the guy? Phil Disher.
Phil Disher, that's who's kind of like.
Okay, I think he's a little better than those guys, but yeah, it's harder to do it right now. But
Phil Disher hit a lot of home runs in South Carolina.
He did. He absolutely did. It's the Baseball America podcast with John and Aaron. Aaron, we brought Florida back into the rankings this weekend. Talking about the SEC, we have four pretty mediocre SEC teams in terms of their records in the back of the poll: Florida, Mississippi State, Kentucky, and Ole Miss. Are any of those four teams Omaha threats? You still banking on the Bulldogs?
I think out of those four teams, Mississippi State is still the one that I probably like the most, with Ole Miss next. I still think that, if Wall and Myers do their thing, and the way that Ole Miss can defend, I think they're really athletic. I still like that team. I know you're not as high on Ole Miss as I am. I think that's pretty much been the same way for the last 8 years. I'm usually higher on Ole Miss than you.
I think that's probably true.
But, they haven't been to Omaha in that stretch, so I guess you're right. But they have been good. I mean, they've been to regional and supers, of course. And anyway, I like their team. And Mississippi State, they lost to Vanderbilt. I mean, Vanderbilt's elite. Yeah, they got swept. We thought they'd go in there and probably win one out of three, and they got swept. But, I still think they're pretty good. I think those two teams have Omaha caliber ability and depth. I don't think Florida does. I mean, even now, Florida's kind of having those troubles on Sundays. I mean, last couple of weeks they've been winning, but they're playing Missouri and Tennessee, and they can't close out the sweeps. Those are series that they ought to be able to sweep if they're a really good team. I know Tennessee's got their best arm going on Sunday. I don't know. I'm still not in love with Florida's pitching. I mean, they're scrappy. They're well coached. They're everything that I thought they would be early in the year when I kind of predicted that they would right the ship. I mean, I don't think they're world beaters, but the coaching staff has done a really good job, and some of those players have turned it around. And I just don't think they're not an Omaha team. No,
I agree, and I think that there's something going on there where. I'm still disappointed in their offense. I thought they would, this stretch, last two games of the Missouri series, they scored 6 runs. They scored 12 runs all weekend against Tennessee. Tennessee really is not a team that pitches great. Even the series sweep of South Carolina, they, two tight games. They basically went with the bullpen. it's just not an explosive offense, and I think that their margin for error is too slim for them to get to Omaha for a fourth straight season. I agree with you there, and I agree with you. I would go Mississippi State. I'd probably rank Florida fourth out of those four teams in terms of their ability to get
Me
to the College
too.
Series. You would as well.
No doubt about it. I mean, I just think they're in the top 25 now because they're 9-8 against the top 25, and they've
right.
you know, they've played a really good schedule, and they've managed to get back and you know, they're 3 games above 500 in the SEC. I mean, they're in pretty good shape here. I mean, they put together a nice resume, but I still don't love their team.
Yeah, they've won 4 of their last 5 series. The only one they lost was at Mississippi State. None of those are sweeps except for South Carolina. You know, I felt like that we had to rank them just there from a strength of schedule and from a team that's getting better standpoint. I felt we had to rank those guys. Speaking of teams that are getting better, Aaron, let's talk about a couple of them that did move up our rankings quite a bit that we don't talk a lot about on the podcast. New Mexico and Clemson. New Mexico,
yeah.
I think hashtag personal cheese ball has to apply here for the Lobos. But this was another team that got off to a slow start, but Aaron Fitt cautioned, don't hop off the Lobo bandwagon. And they have been tremendous once they got into Mountain West Conference play. They're 17-4 in the league. Aaron, what has gone right for New Mexico? It seems they always are offensive. How offensive are they, and how much better has their pitching gotten to get them on this stretch?
Well, they're extremely offensive. You know, that part, they have lived up to their billing, you know, with DJ Peterson and obviously Mitch Garver and Josh Belendez, and up and down the lineup now they've got depth, but those guys in the middle scare you, and they've got depth, and it's an elite offensive team, which is what we thought it would be. But the key has been on the mound. You know, they've finally gotten Sam Wolf figured out here. I mean, he's really gotten into a little bit of a groove now last several weeks, and through 6 1/3 shutout innings last week against Nevada, comes back with six shutout this week. I mean, it was you know, so he's on a roll, and that guy's got fantastic arm strength. You know, I think we've talked about him before, but
yep.
You know, former kid from the Dakotas who started off down at San Diego and you know, wound up here at New Mexico, and he's a senior, and he can run up there 97, 98 miles an hour. But, you know, Dan Spencer, the pitching coach there, has gotten him to kind of learn how to pitch. I mean, really, he's throwing strikes. He's toned the fastball down a little bit, and he's commanding it. And that's been huge for them on Saturdays. And, of course, you know, on Fridays, they've got Drew Bridges has been the guy. I mean, this is a converted guy, kind of, you know, a little out of nowhere now to lead your rotation,
right.
Really settle things down for them. I mean, this is, you know, Ray Birmingham just gushes about the job Dan Spencer has done with his arms. When you talk to him, all he wants to talk about is how great Dan Spencer is. He says, the best, you know, best recruit I ever did, you know, all this other stuff. I mean, it's interesting. Some of these head coaches, former head coaches that you know, got pushed out and now are working as assistant coaches have done a great job this year. I mean, you talk about Frank Anderson also over at
yep.
Houston.
That's a great
you
call.
Know, I mean, it's there's some really good coaches out here that haven't, you know, that aren't head coaches that, I don't know. There's a lot of good coaches in college baseball, Johnny, and I just want to give them their due.
I think that's fair, but Dan Spencer has done a great job there, and I just feel like New Mexico, you know that you're on a run when you set up the question the top 25 tracker, and I knew I was gonna end up moving New Mexico up. But when you talk about, you know, you're losing 13-7 in a Sunday game, and then you look back at that was a 4-1 game going into the seventh inning, and it was a 5-5
yeah.
game after seven. So it wasn't the typical crazy Sunday game, but then both teams' pitching staffs were like, huh. Forget it. This is
yeah.
taking too long. You know, everyone gave it up. But those are the kind of games that, you know, Ray Birmingham's team seem to win more often than not. He does
yeah.
not have his teams don't have a lot of give in them, and they have a lot of get. You know, and that's a really good team that I think is finally living up to, you know, having to deal with really high expectations. I know that Ray Birmingham probably puts very high expectations on them every year. But that doesn't mean that every team is the same in being able to live up to it. And it took them a while to find their stride. But their last loss was at Arkansas. I mean,
right.
midweek at Arkansas.
They,
that's a long time ago.
and they split that
Right.
midweek series out there. So,
Right.
yeah, I mean, you're right. They're I think they're dangerous, you know. And I agree with you about the resoluteness. That's not a
The
word.
resolve.
The resolve that they have. You know, they you think back to some of the runs they've made in, you know, conference tournaments. I mean, they've started out. They've had some. I think twice they've started out really, really poorly in the early part of the season and bounced back. And one year they got into regionals with just a miserable overall record because, you know, they kind of get, you know, they get that confidence going into the conference tournament and then just roll right through and they find, you know, they really are they're mentally tough, I think. And I think Coach Birmingham does a good job getting those guys ready.
Aaron, Clemson's the other team that I just really don't know what to make of, but I do think the number one feature of this team is resolve. Coming off a week where they lost, and you know, where they scored what, two runs last weekend at Miami, but some real resolve
Right.
this weekend. They come back and they win this series against Georgia Tech. I don't think we really think Clemson is the 18th best team in the country. But I do think you have to give this team some due. They've lost three series this year, four series. South Carolina, at North Carolina, home against Virginia, and then at the U. And they won a series at NC State. Does not seem like vintage Clemson, and yet in a way it does, just from the toughness standpoint. I feel like if Jack Leggett wanted to have one thing on his tombstone, I think Jack Leggett, number one, would want a national championship on there, and he hasn't gotten that yet, and I think he – you know, is going to keep on going until he can try to get that one. But number two, I think he would want it that he wasn't outworked. He was not out-toughed. And this Clemson team, if there's one thing they have more than Georgia Tech, it's toughness. I don't think that's going out on a limb to say that.
Yeah, no, you're right. No doubt about it. I mean, this Georgia Tech meltdown has been stunning.
It is. It is stunning. Maybe that's the way to talk about this is WTF. With Georgia Tech, but I mean, like, but they're clearly don't have the fortitude that this Clemson team does. Clemson's playing above its talent level, I feel, this year, and Georgia Tech is playing below its.
I think so. I mean, you know, you look at Georgia Tech's offense on paper, and it doesn't make any sense that they're not scoring more runs than they are. I mean, they scored 14 runs on the final game of this series this weekend. Where's that been? I mean, they haven't been scoring runs. You know, it's Kyle Wren, it's Brandon Thomas, Daniel Palka, you know, Zane Evans, Sam Dove, Matt Gonzalez, AJ Murray, Mont Hyde. I mean, all the way down the lineup, you got legit players here. I mean, it doesn't make any sense.
You got name after name after name. Oh, you're supposed to have power. You need veteran guys in this year. Thomas is a senior, and I know he lost some strength with the mono, so that I think his mono really affected them. But other teams have had issues to deal with, and he's back now. Kyle Wren, he's a draft-eligible sophomore from last year. He's a junior. Zane Evans, junior. Palka, junior. Matt Gonzalez is a physically mature freshman. That's his whole shtick. Sam Dove, yeah. Senior. I mean, this team is an old team. Mott Hyde's a junior now. He's a three-year starter. Yep. I mean, there's just no excuses for this team. I mean, even A.J. Murray, his one deal is that he's a big dude. I mean,
physical.
It is a meltdown of epic proportions. And they have a senior ace. On Fridays, I don't get it. I just felt they had to just get out-toughed by Clemson this weekend. And Clemson, I'll tell you, for next year, this is going to be a pretty interesting team. When they return Crownover, Gossett, and Schmidt on the weekend next year,
yeah,
get Crownover a year back, a year further away from Tommy John surgery, Clemson next year could be pretty dangerous.
Oh, I completely agree. Especially, you know, I really like the core of position guys that they have with, you know, Garrett Boulware behind the plate, and then
yeah.
Tyler Krieger, shortstop. We're talking up the middle talents here. You know, it's and then Duggar, of course, in the outfield. I mean, I just think it's a good group of players to build around here. I think you're right. I think they're going to be really good this year, next year. This year, I also agree with you. They're probably playing above their talent level a little bit, but I mean, what are they? 15-9 in the ACC
yeah,
now. I mean,
30-14.
I don't think either of us. Yeah, I don't think either of us saw that coming.
No. Nope.
You know, and I still think you look at their resume, and it's, you know, I mean, they've done a good job against the teams that they need. You know, they need to sweep. I mean, that's important, being able to sweep the teams that you need to sweep. Wake Forest and Boston College. You know, unlike Miami losing a series at Boston College. We'll talk about them later, but in the Google Plus Hangout.
Right.
But, you know, Clemson has taken care of business against those kind of teams, and now they've got a nice quality series win to go with it here against Georgia Tech.
I just think Clemson, we're going to talk in the Hangout about Miami and Texas. I think Clemson, Jack Leggett is a great sign for Jim Morris and Augie Garrido. He's aging a little bit more gracefully than those guys. I shouldn't say it that way because Augie won a national title a few years ago. He won two at Texas. You know, they were just in the finals in 2009. And I think also Augie's like 20 years older than Jack Leggett, you know?
Yeah.
Because Jack got started very young as the head coach at Western Carolina. But it's crazy to see how Clemson, if there's any team that should be more down, it's Clemson. Clemson's recruiting base used to be the Atlanta area, the Carolinas in the Atlanta area, and then the Northeast. And in the Carolinas, they've had to see the rise of South Carolina, their most hated rival, but they have been eclipsed. It started in 2002. I've told that story too many times. I won't tell it again. But started in 2002. It's been downhill for them versus the Gamecocks since then. There have been some peaks for Clemson, but it's been mostly death valleys. Pun intended.
Yeah. Hey.
And then North Carolina got good. North Carolina went from being Clemson's being the team that always lost out on recruits. Not always, but lost out on recruits to Clemson. You know, if you were a kid from Charlotte, all the Richie Schaefers used to go to Clemson. Now more of them go to Chapel Hill. And Carolina, North Carolina and South Carolina, both schools that want to call themselves Carolina, have eclipsed Clemson. And then you lose two great assistants in Sully and Corbs. And one of them in Tim Corbin goes to Vanderbilt and basically takes all the guys who used to go to Clemson, and now they go to Vanderbilt. All the Northeast guys who used to go to Clemson go to Vanderbilt. Not all of them, but you know what I'm saying. So so Jack has had it the toughest, in my mind, of those other big programs. And I know that Clemson's not on the level of Texas or Miami, and they're not. And Jack doesn't have the resume of Jim Morris or Augie, but man, he's had significant obstacles to overcome, from almost breaking his neck to losing his top assistants to these programs that have really infringed upon his old recruiting bases. And I really respect the fact that they are as competitive as they are this year and as tough as they are. I really respect that. So to me, them being 30-14 is a pretty big surprise, Fitzy. And I think they're very dangerous for next year with that young rotation. Anything for you to add? All right, good. Last but not least, Aaron, the back of the top 25, it's been a cluster all year, the back of the top 25. A lot of mediocrity, especially this week. Probably could have cut things off at 18 or 19 and been happy. But tell people a little bit, the one-minute answer on why South Alabama is ranked and why Virginia Tech is back in the rankings.
Yeah, it was very difficult. And, you know, we looked at both of those Atlantic Sun teams, you know, Mercer and North Florida, and just had a hard time separating them. Eventually wound up at South Alabama because we like the Sun Belt Conference this year. You know, I think it could be a three, heck, it could be a four bid league. I mean, if everything breaks a certain way, I mean, that's a very competitive league, and South Alabama leads it by two games. You know, they're robust in the RPI. I mean, they're number 14 in the RPI, and you know, it's one of those things where you look at the teams that they've played, and you know, I mean, it's not, I'm not blown away by their resume. I mean, they're 4-7 against the top 50, you know, they're 10-10 against the top 100. Yeah. You know, I mean, it's okay. They did win a series against North Florida though, which is the team that we were looking at. And, you know, and they've been consistent. They won a nice road series at Troy. Those are kind of the two series that they hang their hats on. They had the one bad weekend at Florida Atlantic where they were swept, but those were three close games. You know, and teams have bad weekends. I mean, there's other teams in our rankings who've been swept. So,
right.
That's why South Alabama's in. I think their resume is pretty solid. And then Virginia Tech, you know, it's kind of a contrast here because in their case, they played a much better schedule, of course. They're in the ACC, and they've got quality wins. I mean, they're 10-14 against the top 50, 17-16 against the top 100, just to compare it for you that way. Series wins against Virginia and Florida State. I mean, that's what their resume is built around, is those two weekends. But yeah, they were swept, you know, by UNC and NC State, and they lost series to Georgia Tech and Miami. But there's
right.
other teams that have lost four series, you know,
that's right.
and they're in the rankings. So overall, I think they played a tough schedule, and they've showed the ability to beat elite teams that really not a lot of other teams have. So I think they deserve to be in here.
That's exactly the thing to put to me, Aaron, is that Mississippi State's lost five series, you know. I mean, showing the ability at its best, Virginia Tech has been quite good. I am worried, and that's the reason they're 25. I'm worried about the fact they got swept twice. But I think the fact that they've shown that at their best, it can be good teams. It's an erratic club. There's no doubt about it. There's been a little bit erratic this year. But to me, it's a regional club, and I like the highs on their resume a little bit more than I like the highs on some of the other teams that we were debating at the back of the rankings. And the lows, if your lows are that you got swept by two top six teams, those are lows. Those are acceptable lows. Two top five teams in North Carolina and NC State. So, got to wrap up the podcast. Ran a little long on the podcast, but Aaron, thanks for sticking with me through it. As always, I'll talk to you on the Google Plus Hangout. We do that every Monday at 12:30 Eastern Time, and we want to remind everyone also that these podcasts this year are brought to you by Project Lomo, and that's launching this week with Logan Morrison heading to Miami High, and down in South Florida on Wednesday. And you can make sure to check that out at projectlomo.mlblogs.com. For Aaron Fitt, I'm John Manuel. We'll see you on the next Baseball America podcast. So long, everybody.